We believe that being a defender requires more than building shooting skills on a range. It's also a development of the heart, mind, body, and spirit. Join us as we explore what it truly means to be a defender in your training and in your everyday life. Welcome to Defenders Live. Hello, we are here again on a Wednesday evening. My name is Laura Thorson, and I am your host for tonight's Defenders Live. My co-host, Adam Winch, he's in the green room right now behind the scenes, and he's going to be helping with the live behind the scenes tonight. He may chime in from time to time, but he is the founder and lead instructor at Defenders USA, and he just so happens to be in the great state of Montana tonight, and we are so happy that he's here. He's going to be spending a long 10 days in Montana through the end of October and the first part of November, and we're excited that he's here. If you want to learn more about me or Adam or any of the other instructors at Defenders USA, please make sure to go to defenders-usa.com. Okay, moving on. This week's sponsor for Defenders Live is Haven Defense Company. Thank you so much to Brent and family for sponsoring Defenders Live this week. We so appreciate you. All right, I'm going to move on to our special guest this week. Guys, we are in for such a treat. Every week we're in for a great treat, but this week especially, we have Adam Boyce from Spartan Mode on this week. And Adam is an authorized instructor of Marshall Blade Concepts. He's based in Idaho Falls, Idaho. I have a feeling in the future I may be visiting Adam. And he's one of only a handful of Marshall Blade Concepts instructors in the world who travel to teach seminars. He's a defensive tactics instructor, a pistol, rifle, and shotgun instructor, and a knife designer. Like, wow, that's a lot of stuff. Also, he has multiple years of training in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts. So when we talk about being a well-rounded defender, I think we've found our guy. So I have lots of questions for Adam regarding this, and I'm so excited that he's with us tonight. I'm going to bring him on to the live right now. Welcome, Adam. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Yeah, you're absolutely welcome. I'm excited to be on the show. This is going to be fun.
Yes, we have a lot to go over. We had a short little interview last night. Didn't end up being too short, actually, because there was just so much good stuff to learn and talk about. But what did I miss in the introduction, Adam? Fill in the gaps and go ahead, introduce yourself to those that don't know you.
Yeah, that's kind of me in a nutshell. I'm passionate about learning self-defense. I'm a student perpetually. I'm always trying to look for the best things that I can do to be better. Also as an instructor. So for my day job, what I do is I actually teach firearms, heavy weapons, explosives to a government agency. And then on the side, I do kind of the knife thing and have a lot of fun with that.
Cool. So then tell us, what is the backstory behind the knife thing then? What got you into teaching knife defense?
Yeah, so there's a couple things that kind of got me into the knife thing. Primarily, when I was a defensive tactics instructor initially, we had some defensive maneuvers that we use or concepts against the blade. And when we put a little bit of force or actually try to resist against it, we found that the methods weren't sufficient to stop somebody that's really trying to attack you heavily. So we started playing and looking around, and I felt more scared of the knife than I did for the gun. When you really start playing around with it and feeling how dangerous the knife really is, I wanted to find something better. So I started searching for the best instructors in the country. I traveled to seminars, basically started researching online who I could learn from, because I wanted to give not only myself the best of chance to survive a knife attack, but also the students and those officers that I teach. So that's kind of what got me into the knife side of things.
Yeah, I think the knife for many people is a super scary proposition and one that we don't want to think about. But if we don't train for that, then we're not going to be able to defend ourselves. And for me personally, I'm speaking just from my own personal experience. And I'm telling you guys right now, just to be quite honest with you, I know absolutely zilch about knives. I know nothing. All I know about knives is how to cut twine. I mean, literally, that's all I know. So that's it. Just a farm girl with a knife. That's all I know. So, but the concept of self-defense with a knife, I have so much to learn, I think, along with a lot of other people that are watching right now. And so we're so glad that you're on. So what exactly then do you train, and who do you train?
So as far as the knife side goes, I teach primarily citizens across the country. Aside from that, I teach the law enforcement officers. I do some special work with some special operation groups. We don't really mention who they are, but I get the opportunity to train with some of those groups. But the majority of people that I really focus my attention on is an everyday citizen that maybe is uncomfortable carrying a gun or that can't carry a gun for their daily tasks. So one of the things I do, again, for my day job is I work for a government agency, and there's federal buildings that I enter where I can't legally carry a firearm, depending on the duties that I'm doing in that time. So the tactics and concepts that I teach is to help people that are in those type of situations where maybe they can't carry a firearm.
Right. And that makes total sense because, I don't know, I told you last night, and I hate to admit this, but like if I'm anywhere and I don't have my firearm on me, I don't feel like I am capable with just hand-to-hand skills or any other thing at my disposal, maybe pepper spray. But beyond that, I don't feel like yet that I'm a well-rounded defender, and that's one of my goals. And so I think that should be everyone's goal. So could you kind of touch on the logic behind using a knife? Like, why would somebody need a knife for self-defense?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reasons why you would want to use a knife for self-defense. Number one, again, depending on where you travel, you're not able to carry a firearm with you. So the logic behind using a knife and the way that we kind of look at the system is you're going to be fighting with the knife that you actually carry. So here's kind of the theories I have behind why you need to, how you need to train. So you need to be able to fight with the knife that you actually carry. You need to understand and quantify the destructive power of the knife. What will a knife actually do? Understand human anatomy. So what targets can I target that will physiologically stop people reliably of all sizes, shapes, and physiques? So that's kind of the big primary targets I look at. And then again, you can't carry a gun everywhere. So that's kind of what yep.
Okay. And so then what are some of the characteristics of a typical knife attack then?
So the things that you're going to see with a typical knife attack is it typically happens at close range. Another thing that happens with a knife attack is they'll often keep the weapon hidden. So you're not going to see it until they launch their attack. They're going to wait for an opportunity when you're not paying attention to what's going on. The other thing is 90% of the world is right-handed. So statistically, you have a higher probability that somebody's going to attack you right-handed with the blade. Another thing you see with a knife attack is people often reach out with their support hand, or what we refer to as their live hand, and they'll grab on and touch you, and then they'll do repetitive gross motor attack on you. So they're attacking you low line, just like a sewing machine, over and over and over and over again. And the thing that's scary about that is, you know, we watch movies and we think, oh, people stab you once, you burst in the flames and the fight's over. And that's not necessarily the case. So it's important when you think about knife attacks and how they occur. If I am going to use a knife as my tool, what are the things that I need to be aware of? So again, we talk about understanding and quantifying the destructive power of a knife. What can I do with the blade that I can legally carry? So when you look at the physiological side of it, again, most people think of stopping somebody with a knife by blood loss. That's how most people look at it. But when you look at blood loss from an average adult male, they've done studies where basically the average officer back in like the 90s was 188 pounds, 5'8". An average officer about that size has about 6 liters of blood in their body at any given time. So when you look at blood loss, to go to unconsciousness, you basically have to lose about 30% of your blood to bleed to unconsciousness. So if you picture three of those 2 liter pop bottles, you're basically losing about one of those 2 liter pop bottles is what it takes to bleed to unconsciousness. Death is about 40%. So when you look at it from a standpoint of how long it actually takes to bleed to unconsciousness, it takes a long time depending on where you're stabbed or cut. For example, the carotid artery carries about 7.5% of your blood. So if somebody's cut across the carotid artery and they have kind of those parameters set of about 6 liters of blood in their body, their heart beats about 98 milliliters every time it pumps, you're looking about 3 minutes and 34 seconds before you bleed to unconsciousness. Now, you also have to factor in, depending on heart rate, that's also going to affect that. And also, the more blood that you lose, the higher your heart rate becomes because it's trying to keep up and keep that blood flowing through the body. So there's a lot of factors in that. But again, like we mentioned earlier, someone gets stabbed, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to burst into flames and the fight's over. Mm-hmm. You need to know how to stop somebody effectively. So again, we talked about blood loss, which is not necessarily the best way to stop somebody from the standpoint, if you're still fighting me for another 2 or 3 minutes and you have a knife, that's an eternity mm-hmm. for me to stop you while I'm still being stabbed or I'm being cut. So we want to look at, how do I stop you? So again, you have the physiological standpoint, or psychological, excuse me, someone gets stabbed and they go, oh man, I got stabbed, and they stop. Other people, potentially they get stabbed and they feel the pain and go, okay, I don't want any more of this. So although those are methods, they're not reliable. The next one we look at is your nervous system. So basically, if you look at the nerves inside of your arm, your nerves are basically what are going to tell your brain to your hand to do functions. Mm-hmm. So if those nerves are severed, then your hand will no longer function, or your leg will no longer function. So it's a very reliable method to stop somebody because it instantly shuts off your body's ability to cause harm. So we have, again, psychological is not dependable. Pain is not dependable. Reaching and damaging vital organs is a method. However, if you're going to carry a knife for self-defense, oftentimes, like if you're in Chicago, for example, the length of blade you can carry is 2.5 inches. And that length of blade is probably not long enough to reach those vital organs reliably, especially depending on how well fed the attacker is. They might be a little heavier set, and to reach some of those vital organs with a 2.5 inch blade might not be sufficient. Mm-hmm. So again, blood loss is not going to be the thing. Pain, physiological, reaching those organs again with a knife that you actually carry is probably not a dependable method. But aside from the nerves, the other thing we can look at is the muscles and tendons. So if you look at your forearm, for example, here in the flexor tendons of your arm, basically what your flexor tendons do is they allow your arm to extend. So they let your fingers extend and open up. So if I can sever those, if I can cut those flexor tendons and you can no longer open your fingers, then you can't wield a weapon effectively. So you can't hold on to that knife. Mm-hmm. The ultimate goal with using a knife for self-defense is not killing, it's stopping. How do I stop this person from causing me more harm? So if I look at it from that aspect of all these ways that I can stop somebody by using a knife, if I target the right physical aspects of a person and keep them from causing me more harm, that's the way that I want to use a knife for self-defense.
Okay. Adam has a question here. Let me bring him in.
Yeah.
Can't hear you.
So, Adam, so good to see you, especially since you're named Adam. Anyways, in the state of Colorado, right, for those of you from Colorado listening, the legal length for a blade is 3.5 inches. So yep. Just so you know, for carrying, it's 3.5 inches. And from my experience, a 3.5 inch blade can reach those arteries if needed. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So depending on the one, so for example, the descending aorta, which is kind of your thick one that runs down the center of your stomach and then separates to the femorals. So basically that supplies 20% of your blood. It's about the size of your pinky. So it's actually a pretty big target. And most people are about 2.5 inches, depending on, again, how much belly fat and muscle that they have there. Also, if you're looking at like lungs and heart in particular, those are reachable with a 3.5 inch blade. The problem okay. you run into, yeah, the issue you run into with targeting some of those items is under a dynamic fight where you're both fighting and resisting, trying to hit some of those right. targets that we naturally want to protect is a little more challenging. So again, they are methods. Yep, go ahead.
So we had a saying in the cop world, and tell me if I'm wrong, but in the cop world, we had a saying that the loser of a knife fight dies at the scene. The winner of a knife fight dies on the way to the hospital in the ambulance. And I found for me, when I rolled up on scenes where knives were involved, they were one, extremely bloody. They're very, very, yep. Very slippery and smelly, right? Slippery yep. on the hands and smelly. But boy, it seemed like that was the most terrifying device in the world compared to even a gun. That scared me more. And yeah. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. So that's a very common, analogy on the use of a knife from the standpoint of everybody knows how to use a knife, whether you've trained in it or not. Everybody knows how to take your knife in your hand and thrust into somebody's abdomen. Everybody's cut a steak before. Everybody knows how to do that. And then the hardest thing with a knife, it is omnidirectional. So whether I do a wrist tie or a bicep tie, or I do a compression lock or whatever I do with that arm, there's always that potential of that knife coming around and still cutting me. So it does add a whole nother level of of violence compared to wrestling around with a handgun, because the handgun, again, you look at, I can control that slide. It's a lot easier to maintain control of that muzzle. Whereas a knife, again, I can rotate my wrist, even if you have good lockup, and still cut you very well. So that's actually one of the big reasons. Go ahead, Adam.
Go ahead.
But that's actually one of the reasons I focus so much on it, on the knife defense side of it, is because that is what scares me more than anything from that standpoint.
So from the defensive aspect, right, I carry a folder type of knife that opens. I do want to get one of your defensive knives, but I carry a folder one. I think they're as efficient. But what I found for me is I'm scared of the idea of carrying a two-sided blade, right? That seems like a really bad idea to have a double-sided blade. But for those of us who maybe won't carry a gun, maybe for a lady, I don't know, is it, I've always advocated maybe you could even stick it a smaller cut down in the bra or something like that to where it can easily be hidden, or in the appendix area, it can hide a knife away. Am I wrong in thinking that or advising that?
No, that's fantastic. In fact, let's talk about carry options real quick, if you guys are good with that. Maybe that will help some of the people listening. So I'm glad you asked that. So there's two basically type of knives that I prefer to carry, either a fixed blade or a folder. So let's start with a fixed blade. And the reason I like fixed blades is because now you're not having to open it. Like Adam was kind of mentioning there, it's as soon as you pull it out, it's ready to go. So the way I personally like to carry a fixed blade is it's been around for a long time, but it's basically called static carry. So let me grab a knife here. So this is actually one of my first knife designs, but basically what you do is you have a really nice sheath. Let me get back here where everybody can kind of see here. And then what you do is you put a piece of paracord through the end or the eyelet. And then off of that, what you'll do is you'll do a cow hitch. So basically picture, this is my belt here, and I'm going to take this paracord and I'm basically going to put it around. Just let me grab this other knife. But I'm basically going to take this paracord and I'm going to put it around the backside and then slide it through here. One second, maybe easier with that. Should probably just show you on my belt. Probably be easier that way. But here's where I'm at. So I take this and I would basically do this with my belt. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I have my paracord there, and then I'll show you on mine. If you guys can see, let me know if you can see this here. But basically on my, let me angle this here, on the way that I carry, if you look here on my waistline, I basically have the string, and as soon as I get it to the end of it, the knife pops out. Mm-hmm. So that does a couple things. Is number one, this is a pretty big knife. It's about 8 inches overall. This is one I designed. But the cool thing with this is when I tuck it here inside of my waistband, inside this crease here, I can bend around and move, even with a big knife, and be very mobile with it without it really getting in my way. But again, from the standpoint of, I want to use my dominant hand primarily for me with the knife. If I have to go to the gun, that's preferably where I want to go. If I go to the knife, again, I want to use my dominant hand. There's kind of a lot of theories like, hey, in law enforcement, I'm going to use my support hand, cut the guy off the gun. Unless you practice that, it does take a lot of work to feel confident with that. And you have to know, again, where am I targeting on their arm to stop them from doing that? So that is an option. But I do like, from the static side, is I can grab this with both hands, either hand. I can grab it left or right hand if I have to. So for me, for carrying a fixed blade, this is my favorite, again, because I can keep it concealed. Just like in the world of guns, it's smart to keep your handgun concealed if you're an everyday citizen versus letting everybody see what you have. So again, personally for me, that's how I like the fixed blade, because again, it's safer to pull it out. I can use either hand and it's very secure.
So if I can add this, ask this, right? It seems like if you're going to use a knife, and I'll just use this one generically, if you're going to pull this one defensively, it's better to hide it away. And I'm trying to do it in camera, but hide it away so it's really an ambush technique versus pulling that out and letting that be known, right? I'd rather this be an ambush thing until the last moment. Am I correct in thinking that?
There's two theories on that. It's going to depend. From the standpoint as a citizen using a knife, I've heard cases of actually a close friend of mine that lives in Canada, and he and his wife were out for a walk one night. Let me see if I can find my trainer here. They were out for a walk one night and a couple gentlemen came out and they had knives and they're pointing at him, and he had a folder knife. And basically what he did is the guys got close and he flipped it open just like that with inertial opening and held the knife and said, get back. They saw that he was proficient to open the knife and said, we don't want anything to do with this. Have a good night, sir. And they took off. So it's going to be kind of dependent on the situation. Yeah. But if you can keep your knife concealed, if you see the situations coming up and you have the legal authorization, so you have the ability, the opportunity, the imminent jeopardy, the preclusion, all those things that are being expressed, and you have to use a knife for self-defense. Yeah, that could make sense to keep that blade. Use it. Yep. And there's ways to do that as far as opening or even with the folder of kind of pulling it out of your pocket and open it kind of behind your back so they're not seeing it.
Okay.
You know, a lot of people will kind of hide a pocket knife like you're holding there. Like if you can open up, they can keep it kind of under your arms here. One of the ways I like to stand a lot is just kind of this way. I'll keep kind of my hand up here, but you can see I can hide a full knife under there if I had to. But again, if I don't have to use a knife in a situation, it's basically not telegraphing that I have a knife out. But if I have to use it, it's super fast to get that blade into action. So that's just
so that makes complete sense compared to say a preparatory stance for a draw with a handgun of grabbing the shirt. That's the equivalent, I guess, in the knife world. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. And as you know, Adam, I mean, I've shot with you before, is that action is way faster than reaction. So if you can prep your draw, that's a beneficial thing as well. But as you mentioned, with knife attacks or knife encounters, honestly, the best defense of it is to avoid it completely. So this is the challenge, is if you have a wife and kids, and now it's like, oh man, I really have to stay here and protect them because they're not going to be able to leave in time, or you're trapped in an elevator, whatever it is. That's where this gets tricky, is being able to articulate in your mind while something is happening super fast is, do I really want to pull this knife out and cause this damage to this person? Because like you mentioned, when you pull a knife out, it's a very bloody and graphic experience for everybody. So that's the challenge with it.
Could you talk a little bit about one of the favorite things you said to me last night was you said that a defensive attack should not look like a bad guy attack.
Yeah. So that's kind of one of the things that led me to Marshall Blade Concepts. That's the system that I train for knives and teach. So when you look traditionally at how knife attacks occur, again, people are latching on with their support hand and that's that low line thrust. If you guys haven't had a chance, Adam Winch here, he did an awesome video probably a year and a half or so ago with John Correa from Active Self Protection inside of a jail. He kind of analyzed how it broke down. But basically, they showed what a shiv attack looked like on an officer. They basically had him stretched out in just repetitive motions with the stabbing. That is what you will see most commonly when people attack you with a knife. So as a law enforcement officer, when they respond and say, hey, there's been a knife attack or there's been a knife-involved situation, that's what they see, is they see several stabbings down low. They'll see a lot of cuts on the hands for defensive, getting their hands up there. Or they'll see them up here, kind of up in the collarbone area. So that's what a traditional knife attack looks like. And when officers see that again and again and again, they recognize that as that's what bad guys do. Bad guys use knives, good guys use guns. So when you look at the situation of using a knife, we want to look at two things. Again, how do I stop this person as fast as possible? We already talked about how long it takes to bleed out. It takes a long time to get someone to bleed out. So when you look at the physiological side of it, we kind of already mentioned on the flexor tendons. Again, that's what allows me to grab and continue to fight. We can also look at the bicep and the tricep. So basically, if you look at the bicep, that's what allows your arm to bend in. Your tricep's what allows your arm to extend. So if I can cut either the bicep or the tricep, basically you're not able to wield the knife effectively, and it gets me to safety faster. So then again, when you look at from a legal standpoint and you're cutting somebody once across the flexor tendons, they drop the knife, the fight is over. Now when you have to justify your actions, hey, he attacked me, I cut him once on the arm, he dropped the knife, the fight's over, versus he attacked me, I pulled out my knife, I latched onto him, I stabbed him 52 times, the fight continued. It looks like a whole different situation.
Yeah.
So that's, again, that's kind of the thing that really drew me to this system. It's a logical standpoint of we're not trying to kill people. They chose the term of our relationship that day. I want to go home to my wife and kids and family. I will do what I need to do so that I can do that. And I want to have my house and my car and everything that I own when I'm done with it. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I'm never in that situation, but that's the way I look at using a knife for self-defense.
So then how would you go about selecting a knife for self-defense? What are some characteristics you'd look for?
Yeah, so there's basically a couple things that I'm looking for. I want to make sure that the knife that I choose, number one, I can open it one hand. So if it's a folding knife, I traditionally most often will carry a folding knife. And the reason for that is most places that I travel, a folding knife is permissible. It's legally acceptable in a lot of places where a fixed blade isn't. So I like to keep my concepts and my tactics so that they're kind of consistent wherever I travel. So I look for a folder primarily is what I carry. I want something that I can open one-handed. So for example, I'll just use this training knife right here.
I can't do that with my twine cutting knife.
Well, I'll show you a couple of knife opening methods. We'll show you that too. And this might help people trying to decide what they're doing. So basically I want to be able to open a knife with one hand. So the idea behind that again is if I'm in the fight of my life, this hand might be occupied. I need to be able to open this and deploy it. The next thing I need to look at is, can I cut and thrust effectively with the knife? So that's going to come down to, is the lock sufficient to lock the knife up so that as I make contact, it's not going to close on my fingers? Is the knife profile, is the blade geometry going to cut well? Because there's a lot of knives out there when you look at, oh, I'm going to buy this awesome knife that everybody suggests. But the reality is, when you use some of those knives, they don't cut or perform very well. An example of that is knives that have serrations. If the serrations are too sharp on it, which are great for cutting twine bells and seat belts, when you do that, sometimes when you cut across like fabric, they'll get stuck. Those little teeth will get stuck in the fabric and then the knife doesn't cut very well. Or the geometry of it, because it has too much belly or too much curve on the knife, as you cut with it, it kind of dissipates all the energy and the cut is minimal compared to what it could be. Versus if you have a knife, let me pull out the slide blade here. This is a Yojimbo. So basically picture a Spyderco Yojimbo, basically picture a box cutter on steroids. So as you apply pressure, that energy is going to dissipate or go all the way through the end of the blade, all the way to the tip. So again, geometry. So back to your question. Can I open it one-handed? Reliably, does it have a good lockup? Can I cut and thrust effectively? And can I manage impact shock with it? So if I do thrust, are my fingers going to slide forward and I'm going to cut my own tendons in my hand? So now I can't use the knife. Those are the big things that I look for. A lot of people will get kind of worried about, well, I need this type of steel or I need this or that. The reality for me is if you live in a humid area, you probably want something that's not corrosive. But the big part with it is a knife reliable to open under stress and can it cut and thrust? That's basically what it boils down to.
It's simple, but things I had never even thought of before. So I'm so glad you came on. So you mentioned something last night about a tool belt versus a toolbox. Could you talk to the audience about that?
Yeah. So this is actually something I picked up from Michael Janich. But basically the idea is we always talk about in law enforcement training or even in the civilian world is I need more tools for my toolbox. I need more things to learn that I can fix every problem. The problem that you run into is you end up having so many tools in that toolbox that to use them conceptually in an actual situation, now you're trying to pull back from that toolbox of which tool am I going to use? So when you look at like a carpenter, for example, or somebody building a home, they don't take around a big toolbox with them all day long. They might have that back in the truck, but what they actually carry with them is a toolbox with very specific tools. It might have a hammer, it might have measuring tape, whatever tools they're using for the particular job, but it's compact and will be useful among the many tasks and jobs that they do. So that's how I like to look at self-defense training is a lot of people will look at things like the toolbox of, hey, I need these techniques. I need to learn, okay, if they're going to attack me with an overhead, I got to do this and I got to do that. But if you look at conceptually and say, okay, I'm going to break this down to the simplest possible problems that I could face. How can I use these things across the board conceptually and not think I have to do this exact technique the way that it's set out to be? So we have a saying in Marshall Blade Concepts, and basically when in doubt, lower your standards. So basically what that means is if you know the reference points is, so for example, we talked about the flexor tendons, the bicep, the tricep. If you see those, basically you know what to do from that standpoint. Cut the bicep, I cut the tricep, I cut the flexor tendons, or I cut the quadriceps so that they can't stand up anymore. Basically, that's the way we're looking at it is instead of spending 30 years Instead of spending 30 years to learn this system, we want you to take something after a seminar or a class that you can use right away. So here's an example
That's also called the KISS method.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the way my little brain works, is I have to keep it conceptually simple for me to use under stress. So KISS is awesome. But thinking about that, how that works is, there was a story of a lady that had studied some of this material, the Marshall Blake concepts. And basically she had had a boyfriend that was very abusive. He did horrific things to her. He ended up going to jail for it. She moved to a different state. And basically when he got out of jail, he went to her house. He left black dead roses on her doorstep and waited for her. Wow. She basically came out of her house. He grabbed a hold of her. She couldn't remember, hey, I got to cut the flexor tendon or I got to do this. All she remembered was to cut the quadricep. So she pulled out her knife, cut his quadricep. Again, the quadricep is what supports weight. Mm-hmm. And he dropped to the ground and she was safe. So she didn't have to do the fancy hi-yahs or any of that stuff. It's like, okay, here's the physiological, here's the anatomy that I can cut reliably and stop somebody. And it worked. Another case of that is in Brazil. We had a gentleman that had just watched some of the Marshall Blake Concept DVDs. And basically what happened is, a guy came with a broken beer bottle and was swinging at a guy. The guy pulled out his pocket knife and cut his flexor tendons. He dropped the knife. When the police showed up, they said, hey, obviously this is a self-defense situation. And he was free of all charges from that. So that's the way I like, again, to look at everything, is how can I conceptually use this without going so far in the martial arts weeds that I get overwhelmed and don't know what to
do. And as somebody that's new, just like starting to even think about these things, it's very overwhelming to think about, you know, the martial arts side of things and edge weapons and all of that stuff. But that is stuff that is just as important as learning how to shoot, if not more. And I noticed that there are a lot of things that cross over in all three of those areas, because self-defense is self-defense no matter what. And the most important thing I think to remember is that the best fight you'll ever get yourself in is the one you avoid in the first place, right? So that's the concept to learn through any self-defense techniques. Let's see. I wanted to ask you, though, with your experience with civilians, do you find that some people have a hard time transitioning from going to gun training, which, I mean, I consider gun training versus knife training like more hands off? You know, knife training or martial arts would be very hands on and in your personal space. And it's a very different like feel for me to even thinking about it. Do you find that some people have a hard time transitioning into that? And does that require kind of a shift in mindset even, or?
Yeah, so there definitely is a shift in mindset, because as we talked about earlier, using a knife is so much more personable. It's there's no denying the fact that if you use a knife, you're going to have to inflict damage on somebody's, you know, their anatomy. So you're going to have to cause damage to stop them. Same thing with a firearm. The only difference is you're not experiencing that in the manner you would with a knife, because you're not as close typically. So that is a mind shift. And just people, because you have used a knife your whole life, you know what a knife will do. So for a lot of people, it makes them very squeamish, especially, you know, my seminars, one of the things we do is we do what we call pork man. So we talked about earlier of quantifying what the knife will actually do. So what we do is we take a wooden dowel, we wrap it with butcher's twine, and then we butterfly a pork tenderloin, wrap that with more butcher's twine and about 30 layers of saran wrap. According to trauma surgeons, that's about as close as you can get to cutting human ligaments, tendons, flesh, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll usually take a piece of denim or like Levi and put over the top and show you what different knives will do and how easy it is to cut. If you even look at, like, let me see if I got a whole bag of knives here. Let me see if I can find it.
It's like the bag of holsters.
Exactly. Let's see here. So I've got like this little knife right here. So just these little box cutters like this that everybody's seen, like that. That box cutter right there is enough to cut about 2 inches deep without any crazy windups on that pork tenderloin through denim, no problem whatsoever.
Wow.
So again, that's what makes knives, the shift on it is when people come and they see, holy cow, I had no idea that a little knife that big could inflict that much damage. It really does open a lot of people's eyes. And it does take some people kind of really think through that process and be like, could I really do that on someone? Mm-hmm. It is a completely mind shift on it to make that something that you're capable of doing. Mm-hmm. And again, thinking about it just as you would with a gun, you kind of have to think about all this stuff beforehand. Why do you carry a gun? Why do you carry a knife? What's the reason for that? I think I mentioned to you last night, but one of the things that's kind of influenced my drive to learn self-defense, I grew up in a small town in Rigby, Idaho. So it's just a teeny little town. It's called Grant. And basically there's more cows than people is kind of how I like to refer to my childhood. But when I was 12 years old, I lived very close to a gas station. I was about 100 yards from a gas station. And the lady that worked there became a good friend of mine. Her name was Fidella. One day when I got off the school bus, she had been murdered. So basically three 15-year-old boys stopped there and shot her in the back of the head. So here I am, this young boy from Rigby, Idaho, which again is a very safe place. I experienced early on that the world is not a safe place for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that kind of shifted my mentality of, hey, this is somebody that I know and is dear and that I love, just got murdered. What am I willing to do personally so that doesn't happen to me or somebody I love ever again? So it's not an easy thing to think, hey, I'm going to use a knife for self-defense. But the outcome of using a knife or a gun is kind of the same end goal of stopping somebody. And it does have to be you have to be committed to it, I guess.
You have to do whatever it takes, and you have to make your mind up that you will do whatever it takes in the moment. And only really you can know that.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. That's the big part of it is it's going to be a personal decision.
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm not ignoring you. I see your questions, and we're going to have a quick Q&A here coming up really shortly. This hour's flying by. So I just want you to know, keep the questions coming because we're going to have a Q&A session here coming up. I'm almost done with questions. Let's see. There's just a couple more things. What's that?
I can't see all the questions, but I just saw my friend Carrie just put a message on there. Hey, Carrie, how you doing?
Let's see. I just had a couple more things before we get into the Q&A. There, one thing that I wanted to go over were the different kinds of grips. Can you demonstrate and tell us what the different grips are and why each are used?
Yeah. So let's talk about, I'm going to just use this training knife here, and I want to talk about opening methods as well once we get done with that.
Okay.
Because one thing we also need to mention, if you're going to use a knife for self-defense, you need to be able to, what we call earn the draw. How are you going to get the knife out? So that's something we can talk about as well. But grips, the big things I want to look at with the grip is I need to be able to cut and thrust effectively. I need to be able to manage impact shock, and I need to be able to hold on to the knife in the knife fight. So how am I going to grab for that? If you think of the way that human anatomy works with your hand, most people think that when you grip, it's going to be your thumb and your finger. Your main index finger is what you get the strength from. But anybody, and I'm assuming most people on this show tonight, you've shot guns, I would assume, with this group. So when you think about your grip, you realize that these bottom three fingers are all kind of connected as far as the way that your anatomy works. And most of your grip actually comes from those bottom three fingers. And then that's what gives you the ability to have your trigger finger kind of have that freedom to move, where these kind of all move in one group. So when you think of holding a knife, again, you need to hit those three things: hold onto the knife, manage impact shock, and cut and thrust effectively. So one of my favorite ways to grip that we use a lot in martial blade concepts is called the Filipino grip. And basically what that looks like is I'm going to grab the knife with these bottom three fingers, and then I'm going to index it here off the palm so that it fits that palm. And then I'm going to take this finger and index it around, and the thumb's going to go on the back of it. So the idea behind grabbing it and holding it this way is, again, I have strength because of the way that I'm gripping that knife. I can still cut and thrust effectively. Holding it out front this way actually gives me more reach. If you watch John Correa's videos on active self-protection, just analyze the way that knife attacks occur. One of the things you'll see is that reach is super important when using a knife. A knife, again, is a contact distance weapon, so the more distance that I have, the better. So again, that's my preferred method, is that. Also, it's really easy to cut and target where you want to, because our whole life we've kind of used our thumb to push and point. So the same idea is, if I hold that knife in that way, now when I want to hit a target, all I have to do is reach my thumb out and touch what I'm aiming for. So it kind of becomes almost like training wheels in your ability to target the things that you're looking for.
That makes sense.
You can also do a reverse grip. This is super common. Basically the same idea is, I want these bottom three fingers here. you're going to index here, and then the thumb is on top. And the reason we do the thumb on top is if I do have to make impact with it, I don't want my fingers to slide down and cut my own hand with it. There's some advantages and disadvantages with using the reverse grip. Is one, reach is a lot shorter with it. And then also, depending on the angle, I have to kind of contort my body and move it in different ways that aren't as natural as just being able to reach the knife out front. So that's the one I prefer. You can also do a hammer grip, just basically the same thing, but the thumb is just going to grab like that. There's the foil grip. There's all kinds of grips, and you can really use what you want. But again, be able to manage impact shock, cut and thrust effectively, and hold on the knife through the fight are the big things we're looking for.
Cool. Wow. So much information. This is wonderful. We appreciate it so much.
And before we get sidetracked, let me show you guys a couple knife opening methods. I think it's important with a folder. So there's a couple that we like to use. My favorite in particular is called the inertial opening. And so basically what I'm going to do is use the inertia of the blade to open it. So I'm going to grab up here nice and high, and then I'm going to rotate my hand like that. And basically what that does is the inertia of the blade, the momentum of it, as I turn my wrist this way, it's going to hit that gravity point and it's going to just pop it open. So that's called the inertial. You basically just pop it open like that. Again, that's my favorite because I can do like a cover and draw. I can do like a cover and draw here. And as I get my knife out, I'm just popping it right into place from that position. So it's super fast from that standpoint of getting the knife into play. The next one is what we call the thumb opening. So depending on the knife that you use, it might have a disc. It might have a big spider co hole right there. It might have these thumb studs. But basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to grab the knife again right here. I'm going to take my thumb, and it's like I'm flipping a marble. I'm just going to flip it up that direction. So just flip it up that way. The other one you can do is you can do a reverse grip inertial open. So again, same principle. You're just flipping it down. You can do what's called a spider drop. So if I carry this in my back pocket kind of like this, I can pinch the back of the blade, and then I would just flip it down, index it off my hip, and now it's in position. But probably
that's got to be an advanced move.
They all take a little bit of practice, and that's one thing I would recommend is whatever knife you carry for your self-defense knife, get a trainer that's the same thing. So that's okay. Probably one thing I should have added when we talked about choosing a knife for self-defense. The ones I like the best is the Hoag Deca, again, because of its ability to cut and thrust. Its ability to open up one-handed is super easy. And because it does have a designated trainer that replicates what the knife actually feels like. And it is kind of challenging to find knives that are that way. Yep. I'm sitting here with this knife and cannot do all of it. So here, let me help you with that. I'm glad you said that. So we talked about all these knife openings, and they're not easy to get at first. It takes just practice. So with your real knife, let me suggest this too. Be careful. Just like as you dry fire with a real gun, make sure that you're doing so safely. Don't flip your knife off and stab somebody or drop it on your foot. So keep that in mind when you're doing this. Again, a training knife is a great way to learn this. If you're having trouble with this though, one thing I'd recommend, depending on the type of lock you have on the back of the knife, might make it challenging. So for example, if you look at a knife that has a back lock, so actually I'll use this little one. So we see this here, this is a back lock here on the back of the knife. So some of these, depending, like this one is ground down to 2.5 inches. This is a car special. Basically, the idea is I can carry this into federal buildings. If I want to try and do the inertial opening, it's very challenging because of the length of the blade to be able to do that. So not all knives are going to be super great for each of these. For this one, the spider drop, just grabbing on there and pulling it down is a great method. But back to that, what I would recommend is you practice, if you're going to do the inertial, is I'd open it up slightly. And I just get used to opening it like that. Just get kind of, okay, that's how I need to do it. Do another rep, get a feel for it. Just kind of get that feel. And the more that you do it, the more you'll go, okay, that's the motion I need to make that happen. Now back to knife openings. Let me add one more piece to that. So we talked about the inertial, the spider drop, all those. The one that I think is the most important is called the two-hand knife opening. So the idea behind it is I'm going to take my hand up here on the handle. I'll take my support hand. I'm going to grab right here on the back. So I'm just going to pinch the back of the blade with my strong hand or the dominant hand. I'm basically going to drive my hand down, and my support hand, I'm going to drive it up. So basically this hand is going down and this one's going up. So again, I'm just taking this one, I'm driving it down, and this one up. That's a two-handed opening. And one of these is better than 492 of these when you're fighting for your life. So it's good to have different methods. Another thing I'll recommend I don't think I have one here. I'll use this. If you are struggling, let's say you have issues with arthritis, maybe you want to carry support hand, and maybe you just don't have the dexterity anymore to make any of these work. One thing you can do is you can either add an aftermarket wave feature here. So basically what this is there's a famous knife maker, Ernie Emerson. And supposedly the story goes something like this. Back in the day, the Navy SEALs reached out to him and said, hey, we have this great idea. So if somebody's attacking me with a knife, we want this hook on the back. So when they get it, I can like spin it out of their hands. And he's kind of like, well, that's kind of weird, but okay, I'll try it. So supposedly what he did, if this is true, it might be folklore, but this is what I've heard. So supposedly he made a knife and basically had this big hook off the back. And what they found is every time he would reach into his pocket and pull it out, well, do you see there? The knife would basically open up. So he called up the Navy SEAL supposedly and said, hey, are you guys experiencing this, that every time you pull this folder out of your pocket, your folding knife out of your pocket, that it opens up? And they're like, oh yeah. So supposedly he went to the patent office and said, hey, I got this great idea, and he's made a lot of money. I don't know if that's 100% factual, but that's the rumor. But the idea again is the hook on the back, all it's doing is catching on a material and opening up the blade as you pull it out of your pocket. Mm-hmm. So it's a super efficient way to do, get a knife deployment without a lot of practice. There's a couple things with that is, again, you can buy a knife from Kershaw with the Emerson Wave on it, or you can buy an Emerson Wave. A lot of companies make it. You can also buy these aftermarkets. This is made by a friend of mine. It's 5x5 Solutions. Basically, what they do is you just put it here on the spider hole here, and you latch that down. It creates that. You can do a simpler version by just taking basically zip ties and put them inside. If you had a hole like this, put them on there. Just anything that's going to kind of snag as you pull back. So again, the advantage is it's probably the fastest way to open or deploy a folding knife. The disadvantage is it's going to tear your pants up a lot. So I used to carry a lot of knives with these on there, and my pants were just shredded from pulling open repeatedly. The other thing is, in order for this to open, I basically have to draw my arm straight back or out to the side. So if you think of it from a self-defense standpoint, maybe I'm pushed into a wall and now I can't lift my arm back, or I'm maybe on the ground. Maybe they pin me to the ground. I need my
maybe
knife.
Maybe you're defending yourself and your hands are in front of you. Yeah. You don't have an opportunity to get your hand back there.
Yeah. All those things. So if you are going to use that, one of the things you can look at is deploying it out to the side, or you might need to know how to can't get open, still use your other knife opening methods. So this is kind of a part of knife use that a lot of people kind of neglect. And then also when you look at using a knife for self-defense, we also need to talk about the training side of it. Is we already mentioned, use the tools that you're actually going to use. Mm-hmm. I would encourage you that make sure you have the proper training tools, number one. But also, I told you I started going to all these knife seminars and classes. And one of the things I found is most people train with a knife that's not realistic. So they would have an 8 or 9 inch blade. And it's like, okay, that's really cool. Because there are a lot of knife attacks with just like a big kitchen knife. Like this example right here. This just big kitchen knife that's $1.99 at Walmart. That's probably one of the more common knives that's used in a murder case, is something just like that that's cheap that you can find anywhere. So there is some value of using bigger knives in training, but that's probably not the knife that you're going to be carrying around downtown with you. So you need to make sure that it's a knife, again, that replicates that the things that you are going to do if you ever have to, unfortunately, use this stuff.
Wow. That's a lot of great information, Adam. We have some questions. People are just like bombarding with questions. Is it okay if we go into Q&A here real quick?
Absolutely.
Was there anything else you needed to cover before we did that?
I don't think so. As long as we're answering kind of what people are looking for, I'm happy.
Yeah. Okay. It says, question one says, I would love to hear Mr. Boyce talk a little more about the differences between training men versus women in knife defense, if there are any differences. The grappling up close part seems different for men and women, upper body strength, all that stuff. But is it different?
Yeah. So there is the physiological standpoint of it. One of the things that I'm lucky to do is, and I kind of mentioned this to you last night, but before COVID, when COVID kind of occurred, I basically canceled 13 seminars across the country. And I basically had Tokyo, Japan, Kansas City, all over. So because of COVID, I've had to kind of rethink the way that I teach. I needed a way to keep practicing myself. So on Monday nights every week, I actually have a group of people that come train. And the cool thing with it is I have people of all sizes and genders and all the things. So we have one student in particular. She's maybe 105 pounds. And then we have another guy that's pushing 300 pounds, but 600 pounds. Yeah, no, not 6'4", but he's pushing 300 pounds. And we will pair them up. We'll pair people up in all different sizes and say, okay, is this a concept that actually works? And again, the cool thing with using a knife for self-defense or a gun for that matter is it is a leveling of the playing field. So my student, for example, she's phenomenal. She's a great martial artist, but she also recognizes that there's things that she can't do because of her size and physique compared to some of the men that she trains with that we routinely train with. So you do have to look at it from the standpoint of what can I personally do? And that's the problem that you often run into when you're training self-defense is a lot of people will kind of say, hey, there's only one way to do it. Do it the way that I do it. It might not work for you. Maybe you're not tall enough. Maybe you don't have the strength. So there is a difference. And that's one of the things I really try to focus on is what can I give you personally that's going to help set you up for success? And that's sometimes a trial and error. And then it also, that's kind of one of the things that I love to do is how can I help people with maybe a disability or disadvantage? One of my favorite officers I've ever had the opportunity to train, he actually lost his arm while he was fighting overseas. But we kind of figured out things that we could do for him that would work when you only have one limb. And that's actually one of the things I will enjoy training the most. So,
mm-hmm. Cool. Okay.
I don't know if that answered it, but basically, yes, there are differences. Yeah.
Yeah. And not one thing works for everybody. And I think it's good that you find trainers that recognize that and can work to accommodate your needs specifically. Sounds like Adam's one of those trainers. Okay, next question is, what's the purpose of the holes in the blade of the knife? Is it less weight?
Oh, yeah. So I'm glad you asked that. So this is a training version of the knife I carry. The idea behind these holes is I want the knife, again, to replicate the weight and everything of my actual carry knife. So you'll notice that on this training knife, that it's actually thicker on the cutting edge of it. Again, the idea behind that is if I use a trainer that is basically a blank of an actual knife, oftentimes people will do that and then the blade's not safe to train with because it's too narrow. So when we do our cuts or when we do our things, it actually can injure your partner. So the idea behind these holes is it's twofold. Number one, when I go to train with somebody, I can visually show them, hey, this is a training knife and you can see it quickly that it has holes in it. But number two, it also makes the blade weigh almost the same as the real knife. So it kind of gives you that realistic when you're going to practice opening it and that it keeps it kind of consistent with what you actually carry. So that's a great question.
So much. That is a great question. Okay. I bet this person is from Montana. They say, great information, Adam. When are you coming to Montana? It's funny you should ask that because I was just talking to him last night about coming to Montana. And I think I was going to maybe try to line something up in Dillon because we figured that might be kind of halfway. I think it's closer to me than it is to you. But
yeah,
maybe we can line something up.
That would be awesome. It'd be fun to train with some of you guys. So. Yeah,
if you're interested in that and you're on my email list, email me back and let me know if you would be interested in one of Adam's classes in Montana, if we could get him to come here. Then I can start compiling a list of interested parties and we can maybe make something happen. That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Okay. Laura asked, as a 62-year-old woman, I feel my goal is to try not go into bodily contact situations if I can avoid it. What types of techniques would be appropriate for me if that situation is forced upon me?
So let me make sure I understand that right. So you basically don't want bodily contact. So that means you're not one to touch physically or not use a tool. So that's one of the things I also need to mention is all these techniques and principles, concepts apply whether I have a knife, whether I have a rock, whether I have a pen or a flashlight. These principles and concepts can be translated. If you know or have the proper training, I can use these techniques also for self-defense. So I would say number one is if you don't want to do contact, is I would carry a flashlight with me everywhere I go, and I'd make sure that that flashlight is super bright. One of the things you can look at with a flashlight use, if you don't want to do physical damage to somebody, is I can shine that flashlight in somebody's eyes, and that might just give me enough time that I can escape to safety. Another thing, if you're not carrying pepper spray, I'd highly recommend getting good quality pepper spray like a Palm or a Saber and actually training with it. Chuck Haggard, who else would be good? There's a bunch of people from Active Self-Protection that teach those courses. I think Defenders, you guys do some pepper spray classes too, don't you? But with that in mind, I would look at those tools primarily if I don't want to do hands-on contact, is how do I use a pen or a flashlight and how do I use pepper spray? And those are great tools that you can carry almost anywhere, especially the flashlight. I fly all over the country with a flashlight, no problem. Mm-hmm. And so I literally have a tool that I can use all the time. And honestly, a flashlight is probably one of the most useful things I carry because I use it almost every day, whether it's night when I'm getting home and I'm just trying to see what I'm doing, or maybe I drop something and I'm trying to find it in a dark spot. I'd really recommend the flashlight is probably where I'd kind of look primarily if I don't want to do hands-on training and really get into the physical contact.
Yeah. I was laughing at Brent's comment. They said, I guess I'm going to have to drive to Montana now. I'm like, yeah, you are. Brent, you might as well just get in the truck right now because we're going to be training up here soon. So just start driving, buddy. All right. The next question. Do you have a recommendation for a 2.5-inch folder?
Yeah. So currently the 2.5-inch. So my department has actually just moved to a 2.5-inch. So you have to be kind of careful depending on where you're at because they do measure blade length differently. So with that, I really like, this is a Delica from Spyderco, and then it was actually ground down to 2.5 inches. So from the standpoint of this knife, it does reach those 2.5-inch limits. One of the problems again with this knife for using that is if I want to do that inertial, the blade length is short, so it's hard to do. So on these 2.5-inch blades, I do actually put that added feature there, that 5x5 opener, just so that I can get it out a little bit easier. So that's my favorite go-to 2.5 is actually, it's a custom Delica ground down. And you can pick those up from 5x5 Combat Solutions with that hook already on it.
Okay. I think I know where this question's coming from. I know the person, I'm pretty sure. I see on the website there are trainings in Idaho Falls. Is there a travel schedule around Idaho by any chance? Maybe Moscow or in the Spokane, Coeur d'Alene area?
So there's currently not anything up there. The only open enrollment course I have right now is the Idaho Falls, and that's December 10th. But I am in the works of kind of getting my 2023 schedule up and running again. So nothing yet, but that's definitely something we can look into.
Okay, cool. What is the average time frame you think a person needs to learn and train to properly handle a knife for self-defense?
So it's going to kind of be dependent on how proficient you want to be, and everybody is different in their level and skill. So that's kind of a hard question to ask from the standpoint of, I don't know what you're physically capable of. I would say
learns at different rates too.
Yeah. And they do. So that is one of the things that makes it challenge to give a straight answer here. You need to train for 2 hours and 30 minutes and you'll be good to go. I would say probably though, to be kind of proficient with your ability to open the knife and kind of understand some of those from the basic 4-hour seminar, you'll have a pretty good understanding, but then application, it's going to take some time, just kind of like dry fire work. And there's a lot of things you can do on your own. You can do solo drills. So one thing you can do is hang up a rope and you can practice your angles, your cutting attacks. You can use it on a heavy bag, but I would say the hardest thing with it is the deployment of the knife and earning your draw. That's probably the most difficult part of it is, can you do it under stress? Mm-hmm. Again, it's hard to give you a specific answer, but I'd say you need to put some time into it, but it's not something you have to spend 30 years learning though.
Mm-hmm. And the last question of the night, and I'm pretty sure I know who asked it. Would Adam be willing to come down to Phoenix or Colorado to train the Defenders USA instructors and alumni?
I would absolutely love that. In fact, I've got family in Phoenix, so that would be a dual purpose, all the fun. So, yeah, that'd be awesome. I love that.
Oh, Adam's excited about that. The other Adam. Having too much fun with the two Adams and trying to confuse Laura. Adam, you've been an absolute pleasure to have on. You have so much information. I have a feeling that we could have you on here for hours and still wouldn't even scratch the surface of all of the information you could help us with. So I just want to thank you for watching tonight, and we'll see you next week. Until then, take care.